What up, what up, what up? Welcome to another episode of the Devin Wade Show. I am your host, Dev Nasty, a.k.a. Dangerous Dev Nasty, a.k.a. Choke Your Mom Out, a.k.a. Choke Your Pop Out. And today, we got a super special episode of the Devin Wade Show because we got two remarkable stories, man, two remarkable. But before we even get into that, you know, this whole episode being brought to you by Cap Swag, but we ain't gonna get there yet right now. We got to the left of me.
Girl with Leska D, y'all already know, the beautiful, the one and only, and to the left of me.
Yeah, y'all know what it is. Look, Dev.
Hold on, Wally. We not skipping past the fact that you came in here dressed like a motherfucking assassin or some shit.
Listen, I had to like change my look up for this season because, you know, I just needed to level up. So I got, you know, a nice little shortcut. Got my leather gloves on.
What's up with the leather gloves? You look like
you
a man.
I bought these, and I legit haven't worn them, so I feel like this kind of goes with what I got going on.
Okay, it looked dope. And then the shoes is what, something?
You know, my little Prada platform.
Oh, okay, yeah, I knew it cost a lot of money. Back to the regular money people, Puerto Rich.
I knew we were skipping something when I looked at my partner's face. Hey, yo, what up, people? It's the people's champ, man, Puerto Rich. I'm here, man. I want to send a big shout, too, man. Cap Swag on the custom-made Devin Wade dad hat.
Absolutely. Make sure if y'all want to get something custom, you know what I'm saying, make sure you hit up swagtex.com. And we're going to have that go across the bottom. We'll get more into that. But let's really get into why we are here today, right? Mm-hmm. So today, we got a gentleman who is very, I don't even want to put him in a box, but this man's life is crazy. He went from prison to millions. This man is who you call. You know, you call Ghostbusters when you got ghosts and shit like that. But if you got a prison riot and you need to get everything in check, you want to save lives, this is the man that you call. This man is known as the Ambassador of Hope. You know what I'm saying? New book out on shelves right now. We're talking about none other than Andre Norman is in the building. Woo!
What's up?
and listen. Oh, you got his piece, man?
Nigga, Boston's in the building, man. All right. It's real simple.
What are we talking about? And to the left of him, you know, this gentleman, if you're from Philadelphia, you for sure know him. He's always hitting the streets, letting people know. He's unapologetic. Went viral many a times with a lot of skits to stop the violence in Philadelphia. We are talking about the man himself. The man himself, B. McFly, is in the building.
Let's
go! Oh man, this is dope, man. So we got a lot of ground to cover. So when we talking about this man who sometimes don't want to talk about his life, is this all boring to him but amazing to us? I want to talk about your life, Andre. I want to tell the people where we're going first, so y'all know why this man is here. This is a person who was sentenced to 100 years in prison.
Yeah.
100 years in prison. This man woke up, fought his way back, learned the law, flipped his whole case, and got out of prison instead in 14 years, and is now one of the greatest businessmen in this country. So I want him to tell you, I want to start off, bro, because I'm from Camden, New Jersey. You know what I'm saying? You from Philadelphia. We all from Camden. And these are the type of places that people feel like you can't make it out of. You know what I'm saying? I want to know your upbringing. Where are you from? And what was it like growing up being little Andre Norman?
Well, first thing, man, I appreciate you having me here, man. Saying visiting Jersey, hanging out with the people. I've been watching you. Good talk. But the first thing I did when I came home was went back and got my big homie. See, my big homie had a natural life sentence forever. I came home, first go, get the homies out. And we've gotten multiple homies out on life bids, on second degrees, on parole, got them out, got them in place. So my story ain't my story, it's our story. We came in this thing together, we rolling out together.
Okay.
Shout out to my man Skin Tight. We got one more homie still locked down in Louisiana in the feds, USP Pollock. And it's about the team. I'm saying niggas get real short-minded real quick. With money coming to play, and girls coming to play, and some Instagram fame coming to play. I'm saying, the nigga that got me at the front door, I had him at the back door. I'm saying, so that's where I come from. I'm saying, I come from, man, you ain't got to make it by yourself. I'm saying, and integrity is everything. When I was a little dude, mom, you know what I'm saying, the basic story. Mom, dad, beefing, you know what I'm saying, no food, poor, can't read well, don't do good in school, go to free lunch kid, kids clowning me. So I started selling weed in the park, and it just scales up from there. When I started selling weed in the park, I was making $30 a day as a sixth grader. I wasn't like balling or nothing. I was just enough to buy some clean socks. So kids didn't laugh at me. You know what I'm saying? I can go pay for my own lunch in the lunchroom. So the cafeteria ladies didn't laugh at me. You know what I'm saying? So it was about getting that. Then along the way, I picked up the trumpet. All through middle school, I played the trumpet. Went to high school for musicians. Then the homies told me playing the trumpet is stupid. Niggas don't play the trumpet. You can't go nowhere with that. Mm. So I gave up playing the trumpet. When I gave up that trumpet, what I didn't understand is I gave up my dream and my purpose. Growing up poor, without a dad, in the hood is all bad, but people have made it. Trying to grow up without a dream, you ain't gonna make it. At that point, my life took a left. I'm in the street full time, end up in court, go to the penitentiary. And when I got there, it was just a reunion of all my friends from the dummy class, all my friends from the principal's office, all my friends who quit football, band, track, everybody who quit on everything was just at the penitentiary waiting for me. That's exactly what they said to me. What took you so long? We knew you was coming. Mm. And I was like,
And was it for the hustling part, or is it robbery? Like, what was it?
I went to jail technically for robbing drug dealers. I have armed home invasions. And my case is the first armed carjacking case in the country.
Oh, wow.
Armed carjacking people for cars. I would jack you for your car and go do a house because I didn't know how to do the screwdriver thing. Mm. I was riding the car one time, and the dude told me that when the pin dropped, the wheel locked, and we can just die. I'm like, oh, this ain't cool. So I need the keys.
Oh, man.
I can't do the screwdriver,
they used to bust the tilt, and they drive the car, and the dude told me one time, as long as the pin don't drop, we cool. That's what he means. He said, well, if the pin drops, the wheel lock, what if we do an 80? He said, this shit's a wrap. I said, let me out. Right. Now, I said, I just started taking people's keys and taking their cars and persons. It was armed carjacking. But long story short, I got there, bunch of robberies. And I was just running, living the life. And inside, they showed me the life inside, how to hustle inside. And I just got down with the mob for the first 6 years of my sentence. Picked up a bunch of new cases, attempted murder, got shipped around the country. You seen Connie, I lived it. I don't even talk about it because it's a waste of time. You know what I'm saying? Woke up, said, yo, I'm the king of nowhere. I said, I want to be someplace. I said, I'm going to go home and go to Harvard. And that was it.
So I know you say that so simply now, but you know how big of a leap that is for a person to be in that predicament. And the reason why, you already know how the Devin Wade Show is. You know, we don't give a fuck about the, uprising, bringing up the streets and making that a big thing. But it is a big deal to me to really let people know who a person was to see how big that transformation was. Mm-hmm. So for you to go into prison like that, end up, like you said, getting mobbed up and then becoming a top guy. This isn't just anybody that ended up converting his life. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I'm too high up. I'm too deep in. I can't let go of this. You are a high up guy.
They came through Massachusetts, and we're not home state. Got it on lock. State said, we ain't housing you no more. They sent us all to the feds.
Wow.
They packed us up, put us on a bus, sent us to the feds. I told a friend, I was in Terre Haute, Lewisburg, Atlanta, El Reno, all the federal penitentiaries back in the day, getting them the business. Feds kicked me out. They said, nah, we can't deal with this dude. We can't catch him or kill him. They sent me back to Mass. My big homie, who was in the feds, putting in work, I always say, who's they got big homies? My big homie was in Florence, ADX. That's the last stop on the highway in corrections in America. That's where they put you when they got no place else to put you. Mm. He was up there for 8 years, so we flipped his case. You know what I'm saying? So my big homie was a big homie. I don't know about nobody else. I ain't hating, ain't claiming. But when I came home, when I got back, still living that life, when I got out, my homie was still in Florence, ADX. He owns his own house right now. He's married right now. He got a trucking company right now. He's handling his business right now. So I didn't want to send him money and packages and fat chicks. I went and sent him a lawyer. Mm. You say it's about penitentiary, it's about getting out, all of us.
Mm. So what do you say to the people that don't have that mindset?
If you don't have that mindset, you're just going to stay where you are. Mm. Ain't a whole lot to that. If you're stuck on stupid, you're just going to be stuck on stupid.
Because there's a lot of people like that.
They say you can't help somebody that doesn't want to be helped. Mm. And I say that's wrong. There's just a step before that that's getting them ready to want help. Mm. So I had people help me get ready to want help. Mm. And when I got in that space, and I could access and take advantage of what was around me. That's so deep. Some people need help to learn how to get help. Stop throwing pearls in front of swine. Get that man out of the pen, get his mind right, then he can receive.
You know, that's deep right there, Dre. It reminds me of kind of like when my brother told me once, He said, it's a thing. I forget the name of it. He said, but it's a thing that it's called something when you actually thinking about what you thinking about. You know what I mean? And it was a word. And it's something about just learning how to like prevent and control your thoughts. You know what I'm saying? And I felt like a similarity there when he mentioned that about that step in that phase before you actually getting the help, you actually putting yourself in a state, in a phase of being willing to receive.
Right. So basically you're thinking too much and thinking your way out of it. I want to know how did it had to be some kind of catalyst. What was it that made you say, I'm not what people would say I am. I'm not what I thought that I was. I can go to law school and all of this. The idea that you had was such a big jump. And I know that when your homies heard it, it couldn't have been a thing
they laughed
at me. Yeah. There's no way that they heard it. They said, bro, you playing with us, right?
Yeah. Tripping. What happened? My goal was to be the number one guy in the state. That was my goal. I want to be that dude, which is the big homie. So we fighting, trying to get stats up, putting in work, doing our thing. And I was in a situation where if I put in work on this one shot, I'm going to get that title, which was my whole goal. I got a chance to be the number one guy. I just got to lay these dudes down one more time. I'm already in seg for it. Ain't no thing. And I get that status in my mind. Then before I could do it, I had an epiphany like, I'm about to become the king of nowhere. And it's like the Wizard of Oz. Dorothy running through the Wizard to the Oz the whole time. She get to that line and she pulled a curtain back and there's some dude just pulling levers. It wasn't even real. I'm like, you're the wizard? This is what it is to be the king? And I saw for what it was. I was going to be the king of nowhere. And it wasn't what I wanted. Dorothy said, I ain't respecting you, wizard. And she turned around and said, the power's in us all the time. That's real talk. I looked. I said, this is fake. And I said, I don't want to be. If I can't be the psychopath, why would I want to be in prison?
Now, the person that was in that space, did you guys have dialogue where you was able to explain to even him, like, you're actually the king of nowhere?
Nah. Big homie thought you don't tell the big homie he's nothing.
Okay.
So the big, when I pull the curtain back, it's metaphorically, it's not the real thing.
I got you.
I'm about to put in this work. And I saw myself getting the crown and I saw and visualized the whole thing. And I realized you about to be the king of nothing. The king of nowhere. Nobody in the world care. What did you care in 1985? I was locked up in Terre Haute. What did you care in 1991 they had me out in El Reno? What did you care that I was running the most packages or underground such and such or the most noodles under my bed? You didn't care.
I got you.
Right. You had the most cup of soup. So what, nigga?
Right.
But there's somebody right now in Trenton Penitentiary with the most cup of soups, nigga, and he think he win it.
Right.
Damn. And that's crazy that it'll really only hold weight to the people that's still in that lifestyle. Yeah. That's still trapped in that shit. That's the only motherfuckers that's going to be amazed about your soup count.
Yeah.
In the jail.
I had a phone. I mean, the wall phone, that's Dre's phone.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We got the most soups, or he got it was all shit I made up.
I tell people all that all the time about the streets, period. The average person that goes to work and stuff like that really don't give a fuck about who's the top guy in the street because the real life is different. You know what I'm saying? The world outside of that.
Dre, I want to ask you something because, you know, it's definitely like Dev said, you know, there's a saying out there that some go to the state pen, some go to Penn State. So for you to live it and really come out of the state pen and do Harvard and all of that, I want to ask because I know for a long time it was a big issue in the prison system and in the correctional facilities when they removed a lot of programs and a lot of tools that was enabling inmates to put themselves in positions like you did. I just want to know, was that in your time when your situation happened, was that still available for you? And just, you know, can you speak on that some?
When I started my change, I got to a point, I started to college classes. I got my GED. I'm taking college classes. Got one semester. They pulled Pell Grants. It was like 91. No more Pell Grants for prisoners.
Yeah.
So I can quit on life. I can say, damn, man, they ain't playing fair. Let me go back to hustling. No, I just kept building. One of the homies took me down to NA. I said, man, I don't get high. He said, man, let's chill out. He said, when you hear us talk about drugs, you substitute it for anger. And it took me to AA. I said, I don't even drink. He said, when you hear us talk about alcohol, you substitute it for anger. You can wait on a perfect program or you can make do with what you got.
Right.
Where I came from as a kid, we made do with what we had. So all this, you got to give me this and give me that, that shit ain't real. Mm. So they took it away. But if you really want it, you're going to get it. Know how hard it is to go to the penitentiary? Ain't nobody in there for their first shot usually. Niggas work hard to get to the penitentiary.
Damn.
You caught multiple cases, multiple times. You worked hard to get there. How many times they get your ass probation as a juvenile? How many times they get you probation as an adult? Word. How many times they get you a bail until you chill out? You bang on that wall till they finally let your ass in. Mm. And now you in here, now you complaining about what's not there.
Now, with the AA thing and everything like that, too, because he speaks about this a lot, you know what I'm saying? You know, coming from your history, because I want to mix this in, you know, together. And we coming right back. It's all going to tie in. You, what was your struggle? You know what I mean? You know, you speak about you having struggles, and now you're how far along sober?
4 years, January the 21st.
And what was the addiction?
Percocets,
or opioids, you know what I mean?
Opioids, yeah.
Yeah, so would you agree, kind of like, would you say that the street life and the things that you are in are kind of an addiction as well, and that's why you can apply that to what he, you know, those type of programs?
Real talk, I was nobody in the street. I was just a little dude chasing money. I didn't get a name until I got to the penitentiary. In the street, I was just a regular dude. There's all the dudes with brand names, big names. I was none of that. When I got behind that wall, and it was like close combat, I thrived at that. I'm saying? I didn't, out in the street, I didn't have no big car, I didn't have no big following. It was just a little nigga getting money.
So you were the guy in the prison. This is like outside of the street.
I was nobody in the street. I was just a regular dude in the street.
You just made it.
When I got inside, it's about the work you put in. Mm. I'm saying? I put in work. They kicked me out of the state in 8 months. Mm. When I got to the feds, they kicked me out of Lewisburg. They kicked me out of Terre Haute. They kicked me out of, I got kicked out of real penitentiary.
What do you
got
to do to get kicked out?
Crazy joints.
You got to hurt a lot of people. You got to hurt a lot of people, and in a way that makes them say, we can't control this. Mm. This is too much. Terre Haute in the 80s was gladiator school. Wow. When I got kicked out of Terre Haute, they were like, this nigga crazy.
That's this, maximum, right? That's super max? Is that super max?
That was the young boy gladiator school, Terre Haute. They kicked me out. They called the state and said, we sending this one back. Mm. And I came back. I called a case 6 months after I got back. But it was just my mentality was I don't matter. So nothing matters. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And that was my attitude. And I don't care. I'm here to die.
Mm. So what supported you to switch that? Like, I know Dev shared how, you know, you basically kind of like had that epiphany, right? You were just like, but once you had that epiphany, what were the steps that you took to kind of like get out of that?
I went into my cell and I looked in the mirror. I said, well, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. I want to be successful. I'm going to go to Harvard and be there. So I said, okay, you want to be successful. I said, what's inside of you stopping this from happening? Mm. I can't read. I got too much damn time. I got a bad attitude. I'm violent. You know what I'm saying? I'm part of this game. All the stuff that's stopping me, I made a list and I started working on it. I got my GED. I went to anger management. I went to mental health therapy. I didn't just go to anger management. I went to mental health classes.
Which is important.
Oh, it's changed my life.
Yeah. I don't want to breeze by this, man, because these details that you're saying is people that might struggle with one of these things. You listed a bunch of things.
Man, listen.
How did you even end up in a position where it was like, I can't read or I can't read well? Mm-hmm. Like, because a lot of people...
My father's illiterate.
But that means that you found a way to finagle you to make it through the steps and people didn't notice, right?
No. People don't care because you're in the street. Nobody's asking to read a book. Can you count money? Mm-hmm. Can you give orders?
But what about
school?
Can
you follow orders? I didn't go to school. Mm. I went to school to chase girls and hook up with the homies.
But what I'm saying is, I never got
to ninth grade.
So how did you even get to ninth? Like for a person, I don't even understand how that works. You feel what I'm saying, B? Mm-hmm. I'm like, how does a person even get that far?
That's a whole another rabbit hole where you can push people through. I'm saying social promotions, it didn't make a difference. Somebody's paying attention.
But that's an issue. So a reason why I'm bringing that up is that's an issue if we have our teachers and people that are in these positions that have children that don't have these particular skills.
And that's a real, just to jump in real quick, like that's a real thing, Dre, when you just mentioned like they just push people through. That's a real thing because I remember having a discussion with someone from my son's school, someone who was like stepping away from their job, and they felt like that. They felt like the school was kind of like pushing kids through. Like the most they would probably leave a kid back is like a year. And then after that, even if the problems didn't correct themselves, they would push them forward.
The school to prison pipeline is real, and the principals and the superintendents and the teachers are driving the bus.
Yep.
So they look at you and say, well, he ain't gonna make it nohow. Someone they'll pull in. If you can run track or you can kick a football or you can do something that they think is worthy, they'll pull you out. If I'd have been 6'5 in the ninth grade, I'd have been on the ball team and the coach would have took me.
Yeah.
if I was something really great enough, somebody would have picked. I didn't have any tangible skills that somebody else wanted to invest in me. So the streets invested in me.
Andre, let me ask you something, right? You spoke on, so you were stating all, you were listing all the tools, right? Like all the things that you needed to kind of work on to essentially become a better person. What was the first thing you actioned on? Was it the mental health?
GED. I was, the greatest thing that happened to me, I was in solitary confinement when I had my epiphany. So I had like another 6 months in the hole before I can even get around people again. I'm locked up 24 hours a day. So for that 6 months, I had a chance to really go deep and hold on to that. And like dig deep on my dream. Had I been in population and had that epiphany, I'd have came out myself the next day. The homies were like, yo, let's ride.
Right. Mm.
But I was in seg for that 6 months. So I actually got my GED before I got out. Mm. I started going to stuff before while I was in seg. That was the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
Wow.
It and is. I got a 6 month head start. Then when I came out, I was only on track.
Mm. And that was the last time. How often were you in solitary before that? How much time did you spend?
I did over 4 years in solitary.
Wow.
The last one was 2.5 straight.
Hey, Dre, before you actually reach into that point when you got to the feds and, you know, you actually reached that point, that breaking point, because I watched the interview, a previous interview with you and the lady, Ms. Ford. You
okay,
know,
yeah, yeah.
And you guys spoke about, and she mentioned, like, programs and stuff like that and, you know, programs used to work. I want to know, like, when you were younger, like, did you come across any type of, like, those programs for, like, maybe troubled kids or kids that was already on the path of getting in trouble that you felt like, you know, may have worked or may have, you know, had a significant mark on you?
I grew up in the 80s. Boys Club was there. My mother couldn't afford the Boys Club, so we couldn't get in.
You had to pay for that back
then.
Yeah,
we couldn't afford to get in. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't go to the Boys Club to pay for the Boys Club. Back then, there was no internet, no social media, no digital nothing, so it wasn't in your neighborhood. You didn't get access. Mm. What I got was my mother got one of her uncles, cousins, or something came and sat me down and tried to tell me about, yo, you don't want to be in the street. I'm like, nigga, you need some money. Let me get you some money. Like, right. You come up there, be broke trying to talk to me. And that was my attitude. Like, you ain't got nothing, you can't talk to me.
Right.
And you struggling, how you going to tell me how to live?
I think a lot of kids think like that, though.
And that's real. And you can't say they shouldn't because they do. So when I come out now, I came home and started programs. I'm pulling up in Jaguars and Range Rovers and Cadillac trucks. And I'm talking to the kids. The dude in the 15 passenger ain't got nobody in it. We pulling up in Navigators and Jaguars and Lambos. They're like, oh, we want to rock with them. So now what's the message? The message is go to school, stay educated, get out these streets. I'm doing it from, I'm saying, the door of a Cadillac truck versus a 15 passenger. Mm-hmm. We used to pull up in the trucks, kids hanging out the window screaming. You pull up in the 15, they're like, you let me out the corner, man? Let me out of the corner. I don't want to be seen in this truck. It ain't cool. Give the kids what they need to build their esteem.
Mm, that's deep right there, man.
Mm. So now this man is a real big businessman. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of reading, right. A lot of contracts, a lot of things going on. Uh-huh. But this interests me. When you came up with this epiphany and you said you was going to do all of this, what's one thing maybe that you could give us that was like a legal, because obviously you had to look at this and then flip your case. You had to see something legally
right.
That was like, I can combat my scenario, the situation that I'm in, that's this impossible situation. We're talking about 100 years, right?
Out of time.
What's one thing that you could find that maybe might have sparked, like, that kept your energy going, like, I can beat this whole thing?
This is the first thing. There's some people who listen, like, nigga, in 100 years, how the fuck you get out? Something wrong with a nigga. Nah, something wrong with your ass. You know what I'm saying? Real talk. My shit's in the books. Google it. Commonwealth versus Norman. I got out legit. You know what I'm saying? So, but the mindset of it's not possible. So there's people, that shit ain't real. You know what I'm saying? So I had 7 to 10, 2 9 to 10s, 2 15 to 20s. You know what I'm saying? 7 to 10, 2 9 to 10s, 2 10s, 2 15 to 20s, 2 3 to 5s, and a 5. Some of that shit was running wild. Some of it wasn't. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't I had to serve 100. I was supposed to do some 20 and some change.
When and wild, you mean the difference between wild and concurrent, right?
Yeah, I'm about to say, tell them what that means.
Yeah, some of it was concurrent, some of it was from and after.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I should have did like 26. So when I flipped my case, it took 10 years off. You know what I'm saying? I got parole, it took like another 3 years off. So I got out early. So if you added it all up, like 15 sentences, it came out to 105 years total. But the thing that I had to fix was my attitude of believing it's not possible. That was my biggest thing. Let me tell you my biggest problem. I was a quitter. My dad taught me when he walked out on us in the first grade that you can quit on your kids. So if he can quit on me, I can quit on school, I can quit on track, I can quit on band, I can quit on choir, I can quit on anything. And I quit on me. When I went to counseling, we went through all this stuff, and the counselor finally said, boom, there it is, you're a quitter. I said, nah, I stand up for everything. He said, no, you're a quitter. You quit on yourself. And we dragged it back and attached it to when my dad left me. And I associated that with quitting. He said, once we fixed my quit gene, I took that shit out and threw it away. Nothing was impossible.
I love you said quick gene.
Quit gene is bananas.
I love that.
And Andre, so at that one point, you got to a point in your life, you got to that one point where you basically was like, you made up your mind and you was like, nah, like I'm going to turn it around. You actually, like you said, you believed that you was getting out. Regardless of that 100-year sentence, you believe, no, I'm going to get out of this situation.
And as bad as my circumstance was, the big homie had a natural life sentence.
What do you mean by natural life?
That means you die in jail. You murdered somebody in a felony, and they told you, you die here. Mm-hmm. There's nobody can release you but the governor.
Wow.
And or the court case being flipped. Mm. We came home. He didn't believe. But I believed for him. You see? And I owed him because he held me down. Mm. So I believed for him, and we just kept pushing. And he's been home 10 years now.
Wow.
I'm saying his case in the books. No, we in the books. Commonwealth versus Williams. I'm saying we ain't coming outside. We just walked out the front door the same way we walked in. And belief is the first step.
Can I ask a question? Because it's amazing how, you know, a lot of guys are in prison and you got these jailhouse lawyers.
Yeah.
Right? Why a lot of them don't come home and fight for the people that's wrongly convicted? Because I think it's a proven fact that a lot of men, 80% of the black men in prison are, 80% of the men that are in prison are black, right? Why they don't come home and just say, you know what? Let me go ahead and fight for the guys that's out here too, so you don't have to fight for them in there before they get in there.
Integrity.
Okay.
Everybody claims to have integrity.
Got you.
But when it's put on a line, then you see. I watched First 48. Toughest nigga in the world, telling.
Yeah, burger and fries. Yo, once they got that burger and fries
and a cigarette. Like,
Johnny shot him right in front of the motherfucking convenience store.
So, I mean, people, like I said, you look at me, I look like my mom, so I'll never look tough. I don't talk tough. I got dimples. Cool. But that nigga ain't real. Nigga, I done been through it.
Right.
I didn't walk the yard. Right. I didn't lead the yard. Didn't lead the charge. It's not about how you stand or how you look. It's how you roll. You saying? So, when I came home, I truly appreciated when I walked through the front door, a scared 18-year-old, the homie pulled me up and helped me stay safe and understand how to survive this place. And I said to myself, I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that. And I'm the dude who believes in what I believe in, and I didn't forgive him. Niggas be like, yeah, thanks for holding me down. I never forget you. They lying. Because they don't care about you. They don't care about themselves. I'm not saying I'm the only dude in the world with integrity.
Right.
I'm just saying what made me go back is my integrity.
That takes more than just integrity, right? That takes patience to be out in the world full of zoom, 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 zoom.
No, I was zooming. No, I was in the club. I was in the club.
Hold on. Take this out. I'm going to share some behind the scenes, right? So y'all know the Devin Wade Show, man. It's fun. We bug out, whatever. So I'm talking to him, and I tell him, like, look, man, we do an episode. It's serious, man, for real. I can leave the nasty girls at home. We don't got to have nothing there, no drinks, no nothing. He said, hold on.
Like, time out.
Are you going to get into the girls?
He said,
why would you do that?
He said, Dev, you tripping. I need the show to be as. Yeah, he said, you stop playing with me, bro. You know what I'm saying?
I want all that.
He said, I want all that shit.
I said, I want her right there. And she better start smiling at me like she smiled at the boy Cuba. She was all lit up. I'm like, I'm going to go back and watch this tape.
That was Omar,
she don't light up,
way. That was Omar.
Omar. Cuba's little brother. Yeah, I want to see that look. I want to see that look. Yeah.
Oh, that's right, Andre.
Nah, if I don't get that look, you're going to get some hate mail.
real quick, I wanted to kind of like touch on what B. McFly said back on like the people, because I know for like the people who be in the system who actually be like paralegals, you know, shot. And we need, of course, more people like Dre that could turn it around and actually come home and implement your plan and stay on it, you know, and succeed with it. But I think, like, a lot of the people that end up in the jail system and end up being, like, lawyers and paralegals, you know, when they get out, because I don't want to make it seem like nobody probably has ever tried or nobody wanted to, but I know a lot of these people used to be the same people that we would call on the streets and on the block a fiend and things of that nature. So I think a lot of people used to go back to their old stomping grounds and really, like, fall victim to their old people, places, and things. And that's why these people wasn't able to empower themselves and put themselves in a position, kind of like, because I know a lot of dudes, like he said something that was crazy. It's really like a lot of dudes in the prison system that become sharp as a nail with the law and shit like that. And then, you know, when they get out, you just, they fall victim to whatever it was that brought them there in the first place. And you never really hear from them.
There's two things real quick. We all go through programs. We do programs, and there's two things you can do in the program. You can do the program to get out, or you can do the program to stay out. I hate to say it, 90% of people do the program to get out.
That's evident.
They show up to the parole board, I got my certificate, don't know what the hell it means. I got this certificate, don't know what the hell it means. Niggas, I just got certificates. They don't understand, they didn't embody the lessons.
Yeah.
So I did programs to stay out, and I've been out 22 years.
I'm happy that you said that, because even with... I've been in jail before. I've never been to prison. But even with going to a rehab, people go in there not to go back. They go in there to go back, part and self. Mm. My whole objective was to go in there and never go back.
Exactly.
And when I say something like, yo, I'm never coming back, they think that I'm being arrogant. And I'm like, no, I'm speaking this shit
into existence.
Into existence.
But I am arrogant too, for the record.
No, it's nothing.
I'm not me.
No, that's cool.
I will clown somebody.
No, that's cool. You know what I mean? I'm just saying more so like, I get what you're saying. Like, if I'm going to be in here, I'm going to take it for what it's worth. I'm going to study what I got going on. I'm going to learn what I got going on to never come back.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
A lot of cats, their goal is go to pro board, show a bunch of certificates, hit the door, and they ain't prepared.
It's funny, man, because I had this audio book called Mental Slave versus Physical Slave. And the physical slave is the person that's in jail. The mental slave is the person that's in the streets. Like, you got all the freedom, but your mind is still locked up. And then you got the guys that don't have freedom, their body locked up, but their mind is free.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like, that's the difference between... knowledge is power, and applied knowledge is powerful. You can learn some shit. You could be cleverly dumb. You can keep reading, read all the books in the world and don't do shit with it.
Applications, everything. Can I get a sound bite? Can I get some music or something, my nigga? Hit them buttons, man.
Hit a button.
I ain't got no listen, DJ. No, DJ out having babies and shit. I got a new DJ. No. Nigga,
I wish we would have had some.
He might need a massage. He needs a massage, man.
He needs some entertainment. There you go. Really quick though. Let me ask you something. You said when you went into rehab, you went into to come out, right?
Yes.
To stay out, right? Yeah. Let me ask you something. So when you, how did you? Essentially, just did you take yourself to rehab? What was the conclusion that got you to, you know what? I'm gonna go to rehab.
Man, I wanted to die, man. Like, no funny shit. Like, I wanted to commit suicide, but I didn't have a heart to jump off a bridge. Mm. I ain't had a heart to put a nine to my head or cut my wrist or some shit.
Right.
So my whole objective was keep taking these pills. And I used to ask God when I'm at my highest moment. It's been times at my highest moment. Yo, listen, don't wake me the fuck up. Don't wake me the fuck up the next day because this shit hurts. Mm. And I got to go through this shit all over again. I might get in my robbing bag. I might get in my stealing bag. I might get in my finesse bag. I might get into my lying bag. But these bags, I'm running out of bags. Mm. Now, it's some bags that I didn't use yet. Like, I ain't do the panhandling yet. I ain't do the selling my ass yet. So I ain't really trying to go. That's the, like, for me, that was the, like, damn. Because it's
meant, all be all.
It's like, yo, once I start getting out there, because, and I say that shit because people was out there, men was out there selling their ass, man, for this shit. I learned that in rehab. And I said, ah, drugs make you do some shit that you ain't never thought that you could do. I said, man, I'm 2 seconds away from living in the streets. Man, I'm like, yo, listen, God, just don't wake me the hell up, man. And God kept waking me up, man. I'm like, I'm tired of going through this pain. Mm-hmm. With the help of my kid's mother, too. Shout out to Ocean Clark, man. One thing about a woman. Let me tell you something about women, man. When they, it takes a strong woman to be next to a strong man. Mm-hmm. And I honor her for the rest of my life. I'm talking about she can get married, whatever she want to do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to continue to honor her. Fact, she get whatever she want from me on any level if I can do it.
I appreciate that. That's actually amazing that you said that.
Nah, that's
because
powerful.
A lot of people don't talk about the women that support the men when they're going through their trying times, right? I feel like we don't get credited enough when those situations happen. You get what I'm saying? I feel like the person that you support and do it, you know, they appreciate you, but it's just like it don't get talked about enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, he not telling his homies like, yo, you know, my girl held it down for me. She supported me. She looked out. She was there when y'all niggas wasn't there.
Yo, listen to me. Listen to me. Let me explain something to you. Like, I'm talking about every article that I've been in, I'm mentioning her name. Like, she's going to get the praise that's deserved, like, forever. Because she was the one, although I say this right, she enabled me a little bit. Because I used to be lying, like, yo, man, they got me tied up. Send $1,000.
Oh, come
and she
on.
She sent it, though.
And, yo, listen. And she sent it. And listen.
You
she
know what I'm saying? I'm like, nah, nigga. My cousin did that shit one time. He called my aunt, was like, yo, the drug dealers got me. Mommy, give me some money. He did it once. And the second time he did it, they said, they're going to bring me down to the place and you got to give them the money. She called my mother. She called me. I said, I got this.
Right.
I said, where we meeting at? So I'm at the spot. He come down. He walking to see me. He's like, damn. I said, nigga, really?
Right. Really?
My favorite aunt. You shaking out my favorite aunt, nigga. I said, the drug dealers that you come. Nigga, get the fuck out of here.
Right. Right. And I'm here to tell you this right now, man.
You did
she,
that?
Yo, listen.
What, man?
Yo. Yo, and she knew that I wasn't no chump, right? But drugs make you, do make you weak.
Yeah.
That's a fact. I'm here to tell you this right now. And another, I lost a fight, one of my last situations. So
you took that L on the block?
I took a little L on the block.
Ain't no littles.
It was a big L.
Yeah.
It was so like my mom raised me up, but she ain't losing no fights though.
You know what I'm saying?
No, we were high, it's not fair.
Yo, listen, I was weak and I'm like, damn.
Did you get back?
Nah, you know what I did?
You let it rock?
I let it rock. You want to know why I let it rock, though? Like, because I had to face humiliation. Mm. That shit is, that's right there. Once I beat humiliation, once I faced it,
yeah.
I said, damn, that's good enough. That was good enough for me.
I took a 14-year L, so don't feel bad.
Yeah. Right. And this is a big dude. He thought that I was like 5 foot like everybody does for some reason. I don't know why, but
no, I really thought you was, I really, not 5 foot, but I thought you was about 5'8".
Kevin Hart is you. Go Kevin Hart with it.
Yeah.
Every time, Kevin Hart.
People be like, I go in the mall, they be like, are you Devin Wade? I know why they said, are you? Because they like, dog, I didn't know you was that big.
Yo, bro, I didn't know you was that tall.
You might want to lift your chair up something.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Get this nigga a booster chair. Hold on.
It's crazy because I thought he was shorter. He looks shorter.
Everybody think I'm short. I'm 6'2". Everybody think I'm short.
Nah,
man.
You look way shorter
everybody.
On the internet, bro.
I'm like, yo, how I'm walking, how I'm on the internet with five. I'm
the tall energy. That's what it's funny because at work we was on Zoom and they was like, you know, Wally, I thought you were taller than 5'3". I was like, yeah, because I got that tall energy.
She got 5-inch Pradas on her feet or something like that. Yeah,
you know,
that
you
too.
Gotta, women, we actually have the option to kind of be taller. So that's the perk for us.
Yeah,
you know? True.
So then another thing I want to get into the work, Andre. I want to get into the work.
Yes.
So now when you get you out here, man, and you do all of this big business, this dude's phone rings off the hook. And he ain't shy. You know what I'm saying? He, you know, this dude is doing big business transactions, large contracts.
I want to talk about the actual work you do, the programs you do, and the programs you're known for. Can you tell us a little bit about your programs and how they started, like the South Carolina situation?
When I came home from prison, one of the OGs came home before me, and he used to call me. I used to call him, you know what I'm saying, check in on him. Like, yo, what's going on? He's like, yo, man, these bitch-ass niggas is blocking me. Because all the clowns and the cowards and the PCs and the rapists, they come home and they go kiss butt and they get these jobs. Then real niggas show up and they go to the boss. No, hire him. No, you can't trust him. Mm-hmm. And since they in, the boss is going to roll with the man that's in the building.
Right.
So real niggas kept getting shut out. So my big homie kept getting shut out. He's like, yo, man, these sucker-ass niggas. He was just frustrated. So when I came home, I said, I'm going to make a program for us. Mm. Because all these programs out there for other people, I'm going to make a program. You get to be who you are. And I came home and I built the first program for us. We had a weekly meeting and rapists, government witnesses, all y'all niggas weren't allowed. I said, I brought real niggas in who came home. I knew you from behind the wall. Come on, right. Let's sit down. And some other niggas were coming in the room. Oh, no, we out here. You ain't welcome.
They mad.
You know what I'm saying? And we built the program for us, and we started going out ourselves. But these are our communities. These are our streets. These are our nephews. And we started what they call now Violence Interrupters and Credible Messengers. We started that in 2000. But we didn't understand the marketing or the branding. We just did it. Then we created the faith-based office that George Bush signed into law. We started designing programs on the ground. And unbeknownst to us, the world was stealing them. But we didn't care because we helping our hood. Other people getting rich off our ideas, but we ain't tripping on money. We just helping people. Fast forward 4 years of doing that, then I started seeing my programs come back at me. And people are trying to, oh, I'm like, I created that shit.
Right.
I created that shit. But I ain't trying to hate. I ain't trying to claim. Everything I ever created, I never trademarked. Dude, trademark your shit. I said, no, this is going to help people. I want it to go. I'm not trademarking nothing. Anything I've ever created, you can copy and take. You will not get a cease and desist from me because the program is going to help somebody somewhere stay alive. I don't care how much money you make, as long as you're helping people.
That's that integrity piece.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I did that. Then I leveled up and started doing speaking. I became a motivational speaker. 10, 15 racks flying around the world, Saudi Arabia, Australia, Sweden, Tu Savio.
Real quick, you ran by that real quick. 10, 15 racks, you talking about to do what?
10,000 to 15,000 to get to stand on stage for 40 minutes.
Damn. Heavy.
That was back in like 2005.
Oh, so it's a new price now. So
yesterday's price is not today's price.
And guess what? He right here on the Devin Wade Show, man. Listen,
hold on, Dev. You was in the call me this morning. Homie called my phone this morning. How much was he talking?
$64 million.
And what'd I tell him?
He clowned him a lot in the conversation. I was kind of like, hold on, bro. Why are you talking to that man like that?
He just said $64 million.
I said, yeah. All right.
First came home, I was in the program with some church folks. Mm-hmm. And they dude was a sucker. So he was hating on me because the hood was looking out for me. So he was like, he called my probation officer to tell me he got to get a job. So the PO and the parole had both started to get on me about getting a job. So long story, I found a job as an insurance dude. It was going to make $65,000 starting. I got up to like $120 after 6 months. I was going to buy a drop top, get the jewels, drip out. And he said, you can't have that job. I said, why? He said, you haven't been faithful over little, so you shouldn't get a lot. I said, what are you talking about? And he went through this whole faithful over a lot shit. And they brought the people down from the church and sat me down. He said, Dre, you can't have this job. I said, why? He said, it's a good job. It's clean. It's legit. It's selling insurance. He said, you haven't been faithful over a little, so you shouldn't be given a lot. I said, is that what you're standing on? He said, yeah. I said, I got one question. I said, what if God said $65,000 is a little bit for me?
Right. Talk about it.
No. I said, you talked to God this morning?
Mm.
Now, I literally just did a deal with a company, $23 billion. I do a deal. I got a mentor, people, $2 billion companies. They call me, $64 million, I ain't got time to talk to you. I ain't got time to talk to you about $64 million.
It's amazing. Why do
I got
people...
Time.
I don't have all that. No. I'm not $100 million. I ain't got Steph Curry money.
Yeah, I got you.
But I don't do deals that don't make sense.
Right.
Now, that's smart.
Now, that's... I'm not saying like, oh, this nigga gonna have 10 million. No. You can't... Numbers don't matter to me.
Mm.
So wait, so let me ask you something. All right, numbers don't matter to you. We get that, right? You were doing speaking engagements, you're doing all that stuff. So when the whole South Carolina situation came about, and when Mina came up to you and said what she said to you.
I told her no. She came and told me, Andre, I gave a speech out in Minneapolis. Lady came up to me and said, Andre, that was a great speech about you being a gang leader, changing life around. But can you do that?
Right.
I was like, yeah,
she
I can
tested,
do that.
She tested your manhood a little bit.
She was like, I'm like, she said, well, can you come to South Carolina? I said, lady, I'm busy. I got a whole rack of speeches at $10,000, $15,000 a pop for the next 6 months. I ain't got time to go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, where's your commitment to the work?
Mm. How'd that make you feel, though?
Call my assistant, clear my calendar.
She touched you. She touched call, you with that.
Call my, listen, then I called my big homie who came home, been home for like 5-6 years at the time. He refused to go back inside the penitentiary. He did 29 years, Lewisburg, Atlanta, Terre Haute, Long Park, USP, ADX, Florence. He said, I ain't never stepping foot in there again. I'm out. I'm staying out. I said, yo, come on. Go talk to the little ones with me. Go talk to G. I ain't going to juvie. I'm not going to county. I'm not going to no place near no bars. He refused. But like 6-7 years to go back inside. So when they called me to go to South Carolina because they had 7 people murdered and 30 people wounded. The whole prison system locked down. So I went to the home and I said, yo, dude, I got to go to South Carolina. I need you to come watch my back. Couldn't say no.
Mm. Damn, that's how dug in he was.
That's my man.
Right, so it's like...
He had to... I need you to come watch. If I say go talk to the dudes, share your knowledge, right. He's like, I don't care about that. Fuck them.
But
I said, come watch
you?
My back.
Mm-hmm.
Can't say no.
Mm. And damn. What does your program consist of? What are some of the things?
We went inside. We spoke to 10 prisons in 6 days, 8,000 men. And we got their doors open, and we started talking to them about how they can comport. How, it's all about getting out. The big homie's like, man, I had a natural. I'm out. I'm like, I had 100. I'm out. The other homie from New York was like, yo, I did my thing. I'm out. And we were showing them, man, how they can come home and be successful. My son's about to go to an Ivy League school next year. You know what I'm saying? He tried. He's actually skiing in motherfucking Switzerland right now. Little black kid chilling, having a great life. You know what I'm saying? And you can have that. My son ain't got to go to a camp where they got blue Kool-Aid and crackers. I don't play that because I want it better for him. And we said, we want better for your family. We want better for you. And this program is about getting out. Not about making you comfortable in here. So we bring para lawyers. We bring paralegals. We bring lawyers. We bring people in to help you get out.
That's
what we're going to give you. And this is what we want in return. Less violence.
That's different.
Mm. I do like blue Kool-Aid and crackers, by the way. I'll just keep it real. I'm just saying I fuck with it. That's all, man.
Now you showing the can menu. That's that can menu.
Man, I like that.
That's that can menu.
A creature of habit. That's what it is.
You remember the days. Remember?
Yeah,
but no, we go in and our program, and I don't even apologize. I went to they gave us all the top gang leaders, top influencers, top people in the prisons, put them in one block. And we came inside to teach them real business, how to do deals, how to negotiate, how to work on a case, how to set up their families, how to set up businesses, how to write books. You know what I'm saying? We bring real people in. I'm in so many groups around the world. Those people fly in and come in volunteer at a time where they be charging $100,000 to come on stage. They come to my prison for free.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? They be teaching. I got a man that just sold 200,000 books at $20 a pop. He coming on sending our books for free. You know what I'm saying? They support with real information. Our problem has always been, in our communities, we get garbage information. Mm. Now I hang out at Genius Network, the number one mastermind group in the world. I hang out at War Room, one of the top mastermind groups in the world. I hang out in all these different groups, and I get their information from the best of the best. Dudes in my program are getting the best of the best education. Not the garbage.
Now, in these genius things and in some of the company that you keep there, this is mostly well-off, successful.
Wealthy,
Caucasian
white
folks.
People, yeah.
Yes, right? Now, you also can give services and things for them as well?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Leadership is leadership.
Mm-hmm.
One of the classes I did, I was in London one time. And they took me in a room. I'm talking to this bank. And the dude from the bank came up to me. He had a real sad look on his face. I said, yo, dude, what's the matter? He said, my top salesperson quit our company, and he went and worked for the competitor. Now he's going to bid against us on a contract he's been working for 6 months for. For 6 months, he's been preparing for this contract. They offered him an extra $30,000 in a parking spot. He quit us and joined them. Now he's going to get the contract for them, and we're going to lose. Ain't nothing we can do about it. I said, that's crazy. I've been in the game my whole life. Nobody's ever quit my team, joined the other team, and shot back. They say it happens all the time in corporate, right? I said, man, we die on the corners for each other. We get 100 years for each other. We go to the wall for each other. He said, Dre, not in corporate. He said, can you teach my people that type of loyalty? So I did a corporate retention program based on gang loyalty.
Mm.
Been teaching it for 20 years.
That's a crazy. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
We just took the guns and the knives out.
I hope so.
That, and I like that you like everything that you've built, it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dre, but everything that you've built, the whole like kind of like design, the whole blueprint, the whole mind frame, because this goes back to when you first started this interview, you said something that stuck out to me when you said, when they removed the programs from the prison and you was faced with that dilemma, you used the same mentality that you used in the street. And I like that because you mentioned that in the street, you was like, man, we had to figure it the fuck out. They didn't give a shit. So we had to figure out how we was going to do our crime, how we was going to learn how to get the product right, learn how to break into whatever the fuck we was going to break into on a robbery. So when it came to them removing the programs and you still fighting for your freedom in a positive way now, you kept that same mentality like, nah, fuck that.
We going to find a way.
It got to be a way. Here you are later in the program telling the whole fucking company like, it got to be a way.
I'm a solution expert. You give me a problem, I give you a solution. When we was up in the penitentiary, we looked for every glitch that we can get our hustle on. When we was in the street, we looked for every glitch to get our money on. So I go into a company, I look for every glitch that's stopping you from making money. Look for every glitch that's letting stuff go out the door. Look for every glitch that's making you lose money. And I fix it. I make a list. What's inside of me that's stopping this from happening? I walk into your business, what's inside this space that's stopping that from happening? And I'll make the list and I'll fix it. It's not hard. Everything we did in the penitentiary, everything we did in the street, everything we went through with youngins is transferable.
Yeah. Mm.
So you help them with their problems. I know that you also will be able to, like, you could do work mentoring kids, all types of stuff. Everybody's got different problems. One of the things, you know, we touched on the whole thing with the opioids. It's like, this is one of the biggest problems in this country right now. Just in the last, like,
hold on, she's coming out them gloves.
The last 2 years, you know, last 2 years, just my family alone, the people that we, you know, that we lost, my friends from the perks, the fentanyl, you know what I'm saying? The overdosing and all that that's going on. That's such a big thing. I wanted to know, like, do you actually speak to people that also have things like that, like drug addiction issues and things like that as well?
When I first came home, I worked with black kids because it's what I understood and what I felt comfortable with. And black boys, black girls, Spanish kids, and somebody said, Dre, you're not talking to the white kids. I said, they ain't got no problems. They said, no, I went to a white school. They do drugs. They get high. They drink. They slice their wrists. I'm saying they got fat kids. I grew up watching Beverly Hills 90210, yeah. Leave It to Beaver, there was no fat kids. So I saw a fat, like, what the hell is that? So they had all the same problems we had, just in a nicer house and a nicer building. And I came to understand, being 15 is hard if you're white, black, rich, or poor. And I said, never again will I deny somebody help based on my ignorance. So when I go to these businesses, I look past, I did a speech in Tulsa this week, Room for Millionaires. And I said, cool, we did all the business stuff, how to level up communication. I said, how are your kids doing? Y'all dress up well, but how are your kids doing? How's your family doing? Is everything right at home? And I said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to make myself available tomorrow. And the next day, from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock, I sat in the pizza shop, and them same rich folks, who were good folks, brought their kids to see me. What, no business, no, they brought their kids to see me because everybody wants their kid to be all right.
Right.
I don't care. And sometimes when you're rich and in the suburbs, you're trapped. Because you got to put on that face of being successful. And you can't let the company know that your son has an opioid addiction or your daughter is smoking pot and it makes you look bad at business. We in the hood. It's all good. Your sister smoke, no big deal.
Right.
But when you run a company and your kid out of control, hey, can we trust you? So it's that, like, let's keep Johnny quiet and ship him off to Utah to a program. When he comes back, we tell him, you ain't had no problem. You went to visit your aunt.
Has to be a different level of pressure because, like you said, like, I didn't have pressure to live up to what my dad did because he didn't do, you know what I'm saying? Like, right. It was like, oh, as long as I can stay out of jail, you know what I mean? If I could stay off drugs, I've already surpassed my father in that way. But to have your father run a company, be that guy, have this flawless looking persona, and now you got to navigate around that, definitely got to be hard.
I've walked into houses where it's like $3-5 million house. And some of the kids are academic. Some of the kids are smart, like ours. And then some of them are dumb. So if you're the dumb son, you're like, damn, I got to buy one of these? And then you just start tapping out. You start looking for outs, looking for escapes. Drugs, I'm saying, alcohol, escapes from having to try to live up to this. And as a dad or mom, you want to help your child. But your kid's tapped out and you don't really understand it's your success that's choking them.
Mm. Tell us about the second voice.
The second voice, I tell people and I teach people that you need to have somebody that your kid listens to. There's always somebody that you listen to. So in my house, there's mom, there's dad, there's my sisters and brothers. My favorite sister, and I literally can show you my phone, it says favorite sister. When you look it up, this ain't no joke. I'm 54. I keep it 100. What does that say?
Favorite sister.
And when it rings, it says favorite sister because that's what she is to me. My mom can call me, tell me not to do something. My dad can call me, tell me not to. She call me, I'm attention. It stops right. If she call me right now, come home right now. Excuse me. My dad call me, dad, I'll be done in about an hour. She call me, full stop. That's my second voice. I listen to whatever she say because she's got my heart. And she got my ear. Everybody has a second voice. As a parent, you might not be it.
Right.
So you have to accept you might not be the second voice for your child. Yeah, you're in charge. You pay the bills.
You got to put your pride aside.
He might listen to his aunt. Mm-hmm. He might listen to his sister. He might listen to an uncle. It might not be you. And you just have to accept that and learn to use that to reach your child. It's not about being right. It's about him being okay.
Mm.
But people have this, it got to be me thing. My son, I'm a great speaker. My son listens to my aunt. His aunt fascinating listens to me. I say, hey, let's go clean up the yard. Like, nah, dad, I'm busy. My sister said, hey, let's go clean up the neighborhood. He's running out the door.
Right.
It's just, it is what it is. I'm not taking it personal. He has a different ear to her than he does to me. And I have to utilize that. And that's with every kid and everybody. We have that person that we listen to that means more to us in a certain space than other folks. So you got to cut it clean and keep it simple.
Listen, you got to cut it clean and keep it simple. You know how you cut it clean and keep it simple? With Skull Shaver. Make sure that y'all go to skullshaver.com, man, and get you one of these skull shavers, man. Listen, I've been using Skull Shaver for 2 years. It's no nicks or cuts. You can shave wet or dry, man. Like, come on. I'm shaving right now on the podcast, and you see how spiffy my joint, shiny, bro. My joint shiny. What about Porter Rich? How are yours looking over there, Porter?
Listen, man. I mean, you still got a level or two to reach this level of shine, but Skull Shavers, man. Listen, man. Y'all already know what it is. I appreciate y'all for keeping me on Gleam Glow.
Oh my God.
No, this ain't, yo. I literally bought a skull shaver like 3 weeks ago, and I could have waited.
I'm almost there.
Listen, you got a head full of hair.
No, that's it, but it's getting a little skippy up there.
And listen, man, when he ready, we'll trim him down with the beast clipper. You know what I'm saying? We got everything, man. Look, hit your beard up, all of that, man. Make sure y'all go to skullshaver.com. Skullshaver.com. Skullshaver.com.
Hold on. From a listen, real talk, Skull Shaver, real shit. You know what I'm saying? I went on, for the first time I did a little reviews and the Yelp shit, and I was like, it kept popping up.
Mm-hmm.
On order, I do like 3 different pages, I don't trust the first one. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? And it just kept popping up at the top. I ordered it. I ordered 2 different. I ordered that one and another one. That shit worked. Real talk.
Yeah. Nah, nice. It's real. Real. Nice. I ain't no selling you no BS, man. I'm telling you, skullshaver.com. You know, but
hold on, skullshaver.com.
Yeah, you heard it, man. You heard it from look, the baldy boss, man. You know what I'm saying? He can listen. He can pay for his head to get shaved. He can put a million up.
That's
to get
the OG of the baldies, the big baldy.
Exactly. So real quick, you already know. Shout out to our homie Kyrie Terrell, who's actually working on a film right now with the man back there, Porter Rich. They doing it real big.
Wow.
Money Lovers on the way. But we going to get into, you already know what time it is, relation skits, and we going to let y'all know what we think about this one.
Damn, Daddy, that shit was good.
Yeah, you like that shit?
Mm-hmm.
I told you I was going to put it down. You thought I was playing.
I mean, usually niggas that talk a lot about it are typically trash.
Trash? Nah, not me. I talk my shit because I know what I'm going to do.
So you good, though?
Oh, you want some more?
Hell yeah, nigga, round two.
I'm going to grab a washcloth and I'm going to come back. I got you.
Can you grab me a water?
Yeah, I got you. Yo, fuck. You got a roll,
though. What the fuck is going on?
Yo, look, my girl, she outside. She just popped up.
I ain't going for the bullshit today.
Yo, what? Nigga, yeah. You got a girl and you got me up in this bitch? You got a girlfriend?
Yo, bitch, get dressed. You see I'm getting dressed? Get dressed. I'm gonna just sneak you out the back,
all right? Stacey, what the fuck are you talking about? Why would you have me here and you got a fucking
look,
girlfriend?
Bitch, just get dressed.
Stacey, are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious. Get dressed.
You know what? No. Let that bitch in. I'm not running. You're not about to sneak me out nobody's back door. I'm gonna get dressed and leave, but I'm not sneaking out no fucking back door. I'm gonna just tell her I ain't know.
You really think she trying to hear that shit?
Answer it.
Hey, babe, I'm coming out now.
Yeah, we'll be right out.
Yo, what the fuck you do that for?
Nigga, shut the fuck up and stop talking to me like I'm so regular ass bitch, because you the one that did this corny ass shit.
Whatever you gotta go through, just get the fuck out.
Nigga, shut the fuck up.
What the fuck is going on? Again.
What am I Hello, doing? I'm Ashley, and I had absolutely
yo,
no idea.
Yo, you doing too
Nigga,
much.
I had absolutely no idea when we just fucked.
Damn, Ashley, what the?
No, let her finish.
We just fucked, and he was trying to sneak me out the back door.
I appreciate you telling me.
No problem, sis. I mean, you needed to know. And on that note, now I'll let myself out.
Wondering what she had on me to make you break my heart.
Look, babe, I'm sorry. I got a problem, babe. Like, we can talk about this. We can work on it. Please, just give me a chance. Just hear me out.
You're nasty, you're disrespectful, and I'm done with you.
Baby. Let me just work on you, babe. Please.
There's nothing to work on, Stacey. You are what you are.
Damn, Stacey. You fucked up.
Stacey out of pocket.
Yo, Stacey fucked up, man.
He violated.
He tripped. Yo, Stacey fucked up, man. That was a relation skit by the pro lover, Kyrie Terrell. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So, we got to dig into this because, you know, at the end of every relation skit, there's always the question of who's right and who's wrong. You know what I'm saying? I think we definitively know that the woman who walked in later wasn't in the wrong. We would agree
right,
on that.
Right, right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Why?
But I want, huh?
What?
Jason, why?
Listen, what was she why doing is she not wrong? Andre?
Why is she not wrong? Yeah. She just came home and called her dude on some wild stuff.
That was my thing. Like, what did they live together or was she popping up at the crib?
So, okay.
No.
So,
she got what she got.
Hold on. Go ahead.
You pick a dude who living like that, mm-hmm. you trying to hope he changed.
Mm-hmm.
I had a whole bunch of people try to change me. You say they met me like I am, how I roll. They're like, okay, let me get him to compromise a little bit and let me change his ways. And so maybe he said, hey, I got this problem. There wasn't a new problem.
Change you from what, Andre?
From what he was to what she wanted to be.
You said, I tried to make it Andre, though. I said, yeah, that's you. No. Said, nah.
So that, he in the street. He knocking shit down. That's his thing. Mm-hmm. So when she got him, he's moving like that. So she's like, okay, she probably put up with it and try to give him the change. And he just ain't changing fast enough.
Nah,
so
hold now, up.
Nah. No. He said, I got a problem.
You
he got
agree.
The crib.
No. I'm not saying, I'm not going to, listen.
He had the crib in her bed.
How the fuck do you bring, if he was my man, we probably would have fucked him up. You want to know why? Why the fuck would you bring some chick to your crib?
Because
with you
that's
and your
how
lady
you live with her. That's how they get down.
No, that's crazy. Like, no,
he's still, that's how they get
no,
down.
No, it's deep. It's deep. Just to jump in real quick. It's deep, but I understand what Dre trying to say because it's like a lot of times, you know, and it's vice versa. It's not just women on men or because it could be the other way around. Mm-hmm. But we meet people and they actually into some shit while we meet them. And we actually, instead of seeing them for who they are, we kind of see them for who we want them to be or what we feel we can build them to be.
Right. But that's why she probably reacted the way she did.
She took it on the chin.
She took because she kind of already knew, like.
She said, you are who you are. She
right.
Knew.
She exactly. But so at knew. That point. But where he violated was, it's like, come on, bro. If y'all do live together, like, you violated.
Oh, it's how a clear
gonna,
violation.
Hold on, wait, you're gonna
be intimate.
Even if they don't live together, if I reverse this, right, and I show up to pop up in my girl crib because I want to bring you some Chick-fil-A.
But if she's
something.
A stripper. But she was a stripper.
Hold on, wait.
And you pop up.
You can't do that, Andre.
And the nigga with the hunters is in there. You gotta take that.
Listen, Andre said strippers cheat. I ain't say that. I just want to be clear that I ain't say that.
But if you're dating like a full-fledged 35-year-old stripper, she been in the game since she was 20, and you think she your wifey, you go by and one of them niggas from the club is in there, are you really mad?
Yeah, I'm still mad.
You hurt? Yeah. Are you mad?
Both.
Hurt and mad, okay.
That nigga keep it real. That's what I think about dad.
I think, definitely. No, I think, so this is the real question to the ladies. Do you think the woman was out of pocket for telling and not just like high into some? Because some Jones will just high for you. You
know? No, she did the right thing.
Before y'all answer that, I just want to put out there that it sounded like she knew at first because he said, yo, that's my girlfriend. And I don't know if
she said, but she didn't know. Because she said, what? You got a girl. Yeah. Like, she didn't know.
She was like, so she didn't know.
So, like, at the end of the day, that's
I've been in a closet, unfortunately.
No, you're not in a closet.
I didn't know.
My thing is, like, especially.
I still wrote it out.
Oh.
In the closet?
Hold on. No, let me ask you.
Hold on, wait. You were in the closet because you didn't want. You didn't want to deal with the situation?
Or you ain't want her to bust that hammer off.
Both of them. Both of them.
Honestly, I feel that. But I feel like also, like, we need to just have the conversation. I legit didn't know you had a girl. That's a conversation you need to have. Like, woman to woman at this point, however it's going to be, however it's going to be.
If anything.
But at the end of the day, I'm not going to hide. If anything,
and it's crazy because I understand where B. McFly was going with it on like loyalty with your people, right? But in the other situation that Andre is painting, which could be very possible about just people already knowing what the situation was, I feel like if anything, because if it is that situation where his girl already knew you had a problem with, like, sex, you being sexually active, you dealing with multiple partners, whatever, sounds like the case. I feel like, if anything, shit, he did the other girl probably more wrong by not telling her, like, yo, look, this the real situation.
Right.
I got a girl, and if me and you gonna rock, it's like this.
Right.
Because I got a girl. If anything, he was more unloyal to her.
Right.
Than his wife.
He should have kept her honey.
What Dre was saying was real shit. Like, I know because I've been in it. Where I dealt with a chick, I knew what type of chick I was dealing with. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, I'm good with this situation. And then next thing you know, things start happening that I'm not good with.
And on top of that, what if she, like, caught feelings for this guy, and then now he's just leading her on because she doesn't know that the expectations were, oh, at the end of the day, he's going back home to somebody. And now he has a continuous problem with this girl because this girl never knew about this other girl. So now he has a whole other problem that he has to deal with.
Listen, I want to support wifey because we just talked about, B. McFly spoke earlier, right? And I'm a person, I was addicted to ass.
Is
a different shades. I had addictions. It was real. It was real. When I woke up in the morning, I thought about dumps. So when this man at the end said, he said, babe, I got a problem. I felt homie and I believe him. You know what I'm saying? So the same way his girl at the time supported him, how all of a sudden it was cool when she was supporting him, but if his wife knew that he might have had some trouble in the past, she's supposed to abandon ship? Believed that he could get over this addiction.
I agree, and that's why she carried it the way she did, because I was that woman before. I've never caught
him. Hold on, which one were you?
I was the girlfriend.
Okay.
And I knew...
The real girlfriend or the fake
girlfriend? The real girlfriend, not the fake.
The temporary one.
But I knew... I never caught him in the act. But
you were trying to, though.
Nah, because I don't want to see that. That would have probably fucked me up really bad. But I remember him saying, that same thing. I have a prop. God rest his soul. But he's like, I have a problem. And I used to just look at him like, a problem? Nigga, like, this is not the first time we had this conversation. But in my head, it's like, I knew going into the situation, he's never been in a real relationship. So he going to ultimately fuck up. So I was willing to rock out. You get what I'm saying? Through the mistakes.
It's not a mistake.
Whatever.
Decisions.
Through the decisions and the process. Look at this.
The process.
Problem.
Yo, but could you imagine like somebody really like just trying to carry a sexual addiction? Like my man
B. McFly.
Like my man B. McFly carried his. Because in that case, you would be calling your girl like, babe, I know you gave me mad, but... I need the magnums. No, I need you to send magnums.
You need the magnums?
I'm about to fuck it right now.
You know what?
It's bad again.
Sex addiction is a little bit different.
Oh, come on.
But it's
a real thing, though. No.
Shout out to Tiger Woods.
No, listen. Sex addiction is definitely a little bit different. Sex addiction doesn't mean that you just tell a chick, yo, come over my crib where I'm living with my... Well, my girl at just to have sex, though.
Gotcha. Yeah.
No, is it a sex addiction or like a self-control issue?
No, they have sex addiction.
Sex addiction's real.
No. Sex addiction is all the way real. But let's keep it 1,008, though. I'm not bringing my sex addiction to the home. Like, where I live at.
Did you get high at home?
Huh?
Did you ever get high at home?
I did.
So this
that's
is where I try.
Hold on.
That's your addiction.
No. But I never brought a chick home with me to get high.
You have a different addiction.
Yeah.
You brought your addiction home. Mm-hmm. He brought his addiction home. Mm-hmm. What's the difference?
And hold on, I'm gonna tell you
the difference could be simple, which y'all talked about earlier.
Hold on, we talked about earlier.
Maybe a dude with a whole bunch of bread might be like, okay, cool. But if he don't got the paper to be grabbing hotel rooms at the end of the day, I still got to get these cheeks. So wifey at work, I'm a slider.
No, that's crit. No, he's a clown.
I mean,
listen, word to my mother, he's a clown. Because we all cheated before. Ain't no fucking way we bringing somebody
say
at
I.
the crib.
You gotta be, say you I. Got,
don't say we. Don't say, say we.
Say I.
We gotta speak from the space. I'm gonna keep it on the eye.
It's like
there's men that have.
I just did it.
Not him, but
the ball.
It's just on the eye. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna keep it on the eye.
Okay.
I just felt like, damn, like when you do that, like you just are ultimate scumbag.
Hold on, let me say this. This is a church scenario. Because most people in church who have been healed from something don't want to be around a motherfucker that got the same addiction they had.
Mm.
So the drunk hates the drunk. The girl who was out in the street smashing don't like the young chick who was smashing. So I would say don't judge another man's addiction when you got one. You carried yours to the house and you justified it. Let him carry his to the house.
Right.
Mm. The way you carry yours, he probably like, nah, I done never did that. I done never did that.
No.
So that's what he's saying.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm saying. Because I'm not judging. I ain't judging. I didn't judge him fucking.
In the house.
I judged him fucking in the crib.
So what are you for getting high in the crib?
Exactly. I didn't bring nobody in there with me.
Don't justify it.
If I was beating my dick in there. Hold up.
Stop.
No. Hear me out. Let's get into it. If I got a sex addiction, right? Me, the kids, everybody in the crib, I'm shutting the door watching porn. That's me by myself. I'm not bringing another chick in there. So even getting high.
So what if somebody
I'm getting high
in,
by myself.
If somebody
I'm not bringing
in the
nobody in there.
Getting high, then what? She didn't come.
Well, I wasn't smoking a pipe or nothing. I was just taking pills.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like a process, you dump and call it a day. So again, if you have a sex addiction, right, you either going to have sex or you're going to masturbate. Mm. Bottom line, that's a sex addiction. Right? Do we all agree to that?
Yeah, but I do believe at the end of the day is definitely more complex than that, because with some people, it's not just the actual act. It's also things that how it makes them feel about themselves
afterwards.
The fact that they feel some kind of a value that they can do that. You see, when niggas take down a bunch of shit, it's a feel good about themselves,
man. Yeah,
I might not have the best paying job. I might not have this going on with me, man, but I know I got bitches.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
So it's
a little bit deeper than that. And it is the same. I'ma agree with Andre, to be honest, to say, regardless, when a person has those issues, they go and get it however they go and get it. And whenever they go and get it, even if they go and bring it into their home, the same way somebody might in my household, it was crack in the household.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, to be honest, I get where B. McFly is coming from a moral place. Mm-hmm. I get that. From a moral and a respectful place, I get that. Because me personally, I would never do that, right? Bring it into the household. But at the same time, we talking about an addiction, right? And I do believe that sex can be an addiction, right? And when we talking about addiction, we got to keep in mind that when that urge hits you, right? Because if you ever been addicted to anything, like, I don't give a fuck what it is, weed, anything, you get these certain urges, wherever it may trigger from, a bad day, whatever. And when you get this certain urge, it's like a thing where like you'll try to get it off. It's even if you think it can happen real quick, where like you might try the household. And that's vice versa.
Is it premeditated, though? Do you set the process up?
Probably not. Probably not.
That's the question that I want to know, because if I got a chick, if I'm addicted to pussy, I'm going at it wherever I can get in tune to it.
Right.
Meaning, like, not in front in public, but it's like getting high, right? If I know, like, damn, I'm not waiting to go home to set my whole ambiance up and then I get high, I'm getting high right there.
But this is the difference. See, drugs don't got a choice. It's going to get done wherever it's going to get done.
But that's why
when you're dealing with a woman, I got to make this happen however she tries. She ain't got her own spot. I ain't got this bread. Right. I got my own spot. Or me and my girl got a spot. I'm going to have you slide through with my girl at work. Niggas do it every day. You know what I mean? Can we agree to that?
But that's what I was saying that, you know, in answering B. McFly, like, I just think it's different scenarios out there, so it varies.
Right.
But in some situations, yeah, it can happen because you could get a phone call from a chick like, yo, what you doing? What you got going on? My job just let me off and I was just bored as hell. And he happens to be at the crib where wifey just went to work and he don't expect her back. And now this urge that we talking about, this addiction, hits you and you like, oh shit, I could get this off real quick.
Shit, I done drive in alleyways and everything.
My thing is this here. Facts. When you got an addiction, good, bad, we agree he's out of order.
Right.
That's easy. He's out of order for doing it in the house. Right. Or just doing it, period.
Right.
But we can't shame, belittle, or berate someone for their addiction.
No, right.
So
I can't
call him a scumbag. I'm just telling him you out of order. But you got an addiction.
Right.
If you stole your mama TV, you out of order, but it's an addiction.
Right. That's
so
a fact.
You banging in the house, you out of order,
right, but
you got an addiction.
Right.
So that's when we call him a scumbag, then it's like we're not respecting addiction.
Well, right.
After that's this show, fact. This gonna be this addiction is gonna be the number one rated addiction out.
Everybody's
gonna be struggling.
Listen,
show.
Everybody gonna be struggling with this.
Before we get out of here, make sure also y'all go. You see the hat. I'm looking. Yeah. I got the shadow under the eyes. I'm looking like the hole for podcasting. Make sure that y'all go to swagtex.com. Swagtex.com. You know what I'm saying? If you want that custom embroidery, you know what I'm saying? You want that custom merch, hats, hoodies, whatever, man. 20 minutes from Camden. In Philadelphia, man, at the Berlin Mart. Make sure that y'all hit up swagtex.com. Same day t-shirts, man. Oh, we got the wheel out here right now. And you know we got to get a spin on that joint. You know what I'm saying?
Let's do it.
Who going to do the honors, man?
My money ready. Let's go.
Who's spinning?
They know what we need. They know what we need. One time for the homies.
Just trying to figure it out.
One time for the homies in the building.
You know me, don't put shit on a pedestal. Hold a grudge and I won't ever let it go. Keep it distant.
Shout out to Big 11. You know what I mean? Feeling the strength of the rump.
I don't post for the camera. Took a man and I know that shit damaging. Pussy wet, but he know how to manage it.
Kill the game, I don't know how to play.
I'm taking the money and I'm running, man. Give me that.
Yo, we appreciate y'all for watching another episode of the Devin Wade Show, man. We got B. McFly in the building. Shout out to Andre Norman for stopping in. One of the most incredible stories, man. And this dude giving me a lot of knowledge behind the scenes, man. And I appreciate you for coming up here, man. For you coming out. You know what I'm saying?
Hold on, I'm preoccupied.
give me more.
Let him get the last throw.
Let my man do his thing.
Listen, man. Thank y'all.
Acting like a hustler, bitch. You gon' have to show it. The money don't stop, so it's going where it's going. It's going where it's going. The money don't stop, so it's going where it's going. It's going where it's going. The money don't stop, so it's going where it's going, bitch.